lovely to be with you. It really is. Great privilege. You're a very special group of people. I don't know if you know that. This is a very unusual church in the UK, indeed. Do you know why? I'm sure there are lots of reasons. If I got to know you better, I'd know lots of other reasons. But just looking at you, I can tell one reason. Your average age is far, far younger than the average age of most churches in the UK. There are some that are like you. In fact, my own church, which is called Vine Life Manchester, used to be the Manchester Vineyard, has got a young congregation. That's lovely. But many, many churches haven't. Many churches would have virtually nobody under the age of 40, some under the age of 50. This is researched data. I'm not just giving you an impression, though you'd certainly get that impression if you went around the churches. I heard a young man speak not long ago who had a youth ministry and used to go around the churches. And even where there were teenagers and children, because that was his ministry, so he wouldn't necessarily be going to churches that didn't have any, he said there was nobody his age. Now, he was 28. He said, I go to church after church after church, and there is nobody my age or within sort of 10 years, either side of that. Now, this is a real, real tragedy. And what I'm sharing with you today has, I believe, the answer. That sounds very that sounds very dogmatic and dramatic. I am a dogmatic and dramatic person. I get told off for it, rightly. But I honestly don't think that what I've just said to you is anything other than the truth. This is a desperate situation we have in the UK. The church is dying from the bottom up. It's hard to tell whether Christianity is dying from the bottom up, in the sense of, you know, it's getting older and older and older. So in a sense, it's dying from the top, I suppose, but not being replaced from the bottom. And it's hard to tell how that links to Christian belief. There's a lot more Christian belief than that, a lot more. But not, I don't think, amongst the young. This is a complex situation, but it has a simple, in one sense, solution. Now, I don't know if anybody's familiar with this book called Already Gone. It's actually an American book and based on the American situation, but it's the US. But it starts off with a chapter about how pictures of British churches that are all empty and have become other things, you know, mosques or museums or houses. And so it's making the very same point I'm making to you. Now, the States looks different, doesn't it? Their churches are full, and they have quite a lot of teenagers in their churches. But this research was done. This is a book that's based on some research, in some ways similar to the research I've just been doing. They became aware that the 20s weren't there. The teenagers still were, but the 20s weren't. So this research was to track down 1,000 people aged between 20 and 29 who had come from conservative evangelical churches, not the liberal churches, but the churches who, you know, I'm one of these people, would pride myself on, you know, we're a bit better than the others, really. We believe the Bible sort of thing. So it was from churches that preached the gospel and did all kinds of good works and based their teachings on the Bible. So they confined themselves to those sorts of young people who had once been to church and now were not. And they said, you were brought up and attended as teenagers, churches like that, and now you've left. Why? So the research was about why they had left the churches. And the shocking thing that they found was that although the teenagers were still in church, these people had left in their hearts while they were still teens. Now, culturally, you still go to church as a teenager in the States. You don't in the UK. So they're still sitting in the pews. This is what the book says. I can only take their word for it. They're still sitting in the pews, but in their hearts, they've already gone. And so at the first opportunity, when they get into their 20s, they've literally gone out of the church. Some of them are still believers, some are not. So the book identifies a reason and then gives what I think is only half the answer. The book identifies as the reason the mismatch between the schooling and the media, but particularly the schooling that the young people have had in the secular schools, or even more religious schools, but particularly secular schools that they've been to, and the teaching in the church. So there was excellent teaching in the church about loving Jesus and all the rest of it, and then they heard something in the schools that completely undermined that. Now, the solution that Ken Ham, you may know him, he's a well-known guy, Ken Ham, that Ken Ham puts forward is that the churches need to alter their teaching approach. And I agree with that. To prepare young people much better for this situation. But I'm going to, and that's true, that's absolutely true, don't dispute that for a minute. But what I'm going to say to you is, why does he not address the deeper problem of what the young people are actually going through in the schools? It is actually the schooling that has done it. So there should be another line here. This is, in a sense, the basis of my whole life for the last, they are being melodramatic again, but for the last 30, 40 years, 35 years-ish now, and the basis of the research that I've been doing for the last 6 years. Is there a profound connection between one's Christian position as you get older in life and the schooling that you received? And I believe there is, and I believe I'm going to be able to show you that. So a little bit more about myself. I was actually there were six families in the Manchester area. I've travelled down from the Manchester area to be with you, and it's a privilege to do that. I'd moved to the Manchester area, actually from South London, in 1977. And in 1978, I was part of a team of six families, a group of six families, who started one of the new Christian schools. So we began with just seven pupils on the first morning, actually in an outbuilding at my home, the home I still live in. And so I've actually got a background in founding and working in one of these schools. I worked in it then for the following 26 years after its foundation in 1978. And for 15 of those years, I was the head teacher of the school. When the school opened in 1978, I had four young children under the age of six. They were five, four, and twins of one. And I think someone else connected with you has that kind of family setup. So obviously in those early days, I couldn't do much teaching, but I did always teach, always have a teaching role in the school right from its beginning, and it got greater and greater. And that went on for, well, until about the year 2000. And in the year 2000, and let me tell you that it wasn't easy. I'm not here to give you an easy answer in one sense. In one sense, it's easy because it's clear to me what the right thing to do is. In another sense, it's completely the opposite. It's very, very difficult. It's very, very difficult, actually, to do it. We soon discovered, when we'd set our little school up, that we were on the front line of the spiritual battle. And that, of course, is the biggest issue. We didn't have any money, so that was an issue. And it was hard work, so that was an issue. And we didn't really know what we were doing, so that was another issue. But the biggest issue of all was the spiritual battle we found we'd unexpectedly, in a sense, engaged with. The depth of it, the darkness of it. But that is why it's a great privilege to stand here now, all these years later, and be able to tell you what the outcome was, that it was worth it. It was worth every single bit of trial and tribulation, and I don't use those words lightly, that we've been through during that time. In the year 2000, the governors of our school, I was the head teacher, co-head teacher at the time with a guy called Ross Evans. We always had co-heads at Trinity School from Manchester, the one I was involved with until recently. The governors asked me to take some time out from actually running the school, to cut back on that, in order to promote the school they just wanted me basically to recruit more pupils and more support from the churches, because one of the struggles we'd had was so little support, virtually none, from churches, and considerable opposition, particularly from some Christians, particularly when we began. That might not be quite the same now. Hopefully it isn't. But in those days, we did get a lot of opposition from other Christians, and particularly from church leaders. So the governors wanted me to go around and persuade these churches that actually we were doing a good thing. We'd been going long enough now to be able to say that. That a lot of their fears hadn't been realised. So I said, well, yes, I'm very happy to do that in one sense, because I knew we had a very great message. But I want some evidence. I can't just go in and say, look, it's worked. It has worked. Take my word for it, it's worked. They weren't going to, were they, without something more substantial to back up what I was saying. So that was what got me into the research side of it. And so for the last, since then, 10 years, gradually a little bit at first and increasingly over the next few years, I've moved into the research side. And I'll tell you a bit more about that in a minute. But if we can just go to the next slide, I just want to share with you that, because this actually, in our case, Trinity School, Stalybridge, was the key scripture that God used to call us to set up a Christian school for our young children. And it was Psalm 1. There are other key scriptures, all about how you should bring your child up in the fear of the Lord, all about how you should constantly have the Lord's, the things written on your forehead and all of that from Deuteronomy. I'm sure you're familiar with those passages. They're very important passages. But this actually was the one, and it's all through the Bible anyway. I mean, it doesn't just depend on a few verses. But this was the passage of scripture that called us. And it's Psalm 1. This is part of it. Oh, the joys of those who do not follow the advice of the wicked, or stand around with sinners, or join in with mockers. But they delight in the law of the Lord, meditating on it day and night. Their leaves never wither, and they prosper in all they do. Now, this is the New Living Translation. You may be familiar with slightly different translations, but the impact of it, came through a sermon that a lot of us listened to on a tape. And it impacted us greatly, because some of us were teachers. I was a science teacher at the time. I only did a year's science teaching. I was actually a research scientist before that for a short time, a biologist. But I did a year's school teaching just before my children were born. My husband was a school teacher. So were several of the others in the little group of us that started the schools. We saw what was going on from the inside, you see. We saw, and that was in the 70s, the early 70s, that the Christian Foundation, you see, you won't be aware of this, all you young people. You all look very young to me. You will not have experienced this, that there genuinely was a stronger Christian culture in our country just 50, 60 years ago. Much, much stronger. Patchy, no doubt, but you would have lots of schools, and I went to one, just a standard state grammar school, as it happened. But even my primary school was similar. Not connected to the church, not one of the church schools. But you would have the Bible read every morning, you would sing hymns, you would have Christian standards applied. Anything to do with the Bible was respected and highly, taken seriously. It was a much, much stronger Christian culture. And I'd left school in 1964 was when I did my A-levels and went off to university in 1965. Came back into teaching in 1971. You see, this was a falling off a cliff that happened in the 60s. Going back in 1971 to a completely different culture. It's gone further downhill. Obviously from my perspective it is downhill. Other people might think it was uphill, but I certainly don't. In terms of Christianity, this falling off a cliff had happened in the 60s. The Christian influence had gone. An immoral lifestyle was kind of applauded, and flaunted in front of the children sometimes by some of the teachers. Not all of them, obviously. Not the older ones, but the younger ones coming in. We thought, we can't put our children into this. You know, we were just in it, and we thought it was so different from what... It probably may not have been so obvious amongst the younger ones. We were secondary teachers. It does become more obvious at the later stages. But the essential problem is there from the beginning, and that is that it is no longer a Christian culture, and it used to be. That's the problem we've got in Britain. That's why so many Christians don't see it. So many of my generation... That it wasn't bad from a Christian point of view, the education they had. They have no concept of how different it is today. And was then, in the 70s. This was a very sudden change. So in our home, we were seeking to bring the children up in a loving Christian atmosphere. You know, we would pray with them at any point in the day if they fell over or whatever. We would have Bible stories at the breakfast table. We would say goodnight and sing little Christian songs over them rather than other lullabies. You know, there was a Christian atmosphere, hopefully. That's what we were trying to produce in the home. We were wanting to walk with the Lord all through the day and for the children to be doing the same with us. We realized that putting them into a school... And at that time, we couldn't find any Anglican schools that we were aware of that were any very much better than the secular ones. That may be less true today. I think perhaps it is, and I hope it is. But certainly, at the schools we were acquainted with, and we became acquainted with quite a few in various ways, this would be so different. This culture would be so different. Yes, okay, the infant schools, as they were called then, might be cosy and nice. Even the teacher might even be a Christian in some instances, and that, of course, would be true today. But even there, where you don't see sort of obvious evil, God is not mentioned from the moment they go in to the moment they come out. And that actually has a powerful teaching effect. The teacher may even believe in God. But if you teach as though he does not exist, you are actually teaching atheism into the children, a practical atheism. Or, at the very least, you're teaching them that God is irrelevant. He's irrelevant to most of life. Right, we're going to do our reading, we're going to do our writing, we're going to learn some geography, some history, some science. God isn't mentioned. He's irrelevant to that. Now, that is what this book has uncovered, that... The young people, as they go through the secular state systems, or it's not just the secular state schools, it's virtually any other kind of school, because most of them are very secular in their teaching approach. They may have better assemblies from a Christian point of view. The assemblies may be better. Tutor times may be better if they're sort of a religious foundation. But most of their teaching will still be highly secular, teaching as though... God's got nothing to do with science, he's got nothing to do with history, he's got nothing to do with geography. And so the church becomes an irrelevance. That's what this book concluded. That is why the 20-year-olds don't want to be there anymore. And in this country, it's younger than that. That's why no young people, in some instances, want to be there anymore. Okay, it's sweet and cozy, and it is a community in a country where there's so little community. But its teaching is irrelevant to most of life. That is where the young people have ended up. That is the great tragedy. So we thought, even in these cosy infant schools, they're going to be training our children in godlessness. Now, I know it sounds, you know, it's not, it's a hard way of putting it, perhaps. Can we then be surprised when they come out the other end godless? Not wanting God in their lives, living without him, even if they would notionally still say they were Christians. And that, of course, doesn't last very long. So this was why we took this radical step, and it was radical in the UK in the 70s, it was done in other countries, of setting up our own school. Now, we were teachers. Our average age was 31. We weren't all teachers, but several of us were. So we did have an education background. Some of us. Our average age was 31, And we thought we knew a lot, and obviously we didn't. So we learnt by our mistakes a lot as we went along. Our school was different from David Freeman's because his was a church-linked school and able to begin in a bigger way because it had the backing of a big church, and some of the schools are like that. I subsequently co-wrote the book with David, which involved me researching a lot of the schools. And the research that I started in the year 2000, I began with my own school, but continued across 11 of the schools. So I'm pretty well acquainted with a lot of the schools now. I've been involved in the leadership of them, of the Christian Schools Trust, for about 6 or 7 years. So although I started off in one school, I became acquainted with a lot of them. And some of them probably looked a bit more efficient than ours did. but anyway, when I went out to conduct the research amongst our former pupils so I could have some data to take to the church leaders, you see, that's what I did. I went out, I got them as many as I could to fill in a questionnaire. The whole questionnaire thing began. You know, are you a Christian? What do you think of your schooling? Tell us about it, kind of thing. It wasn't a very well-constructed questionnaire because I didn't know how to construct questionnaires in those days. So I got 65 back from our school, did it across the other schools, and ended up with 240. Now, well, I'll just very briefly tell you what came out of that. Some academic papers have subsequently come out of it. But for me, what came out of it was the title of this book. That's why I called this book, this title, The Love of God in the Classroom. Because with all this chaos and confusion, from my point of view, often, you know, feeling, what we're doing, we're running a school, we hardly know what we're doing. For a start, the young people came out with excellent academic results. Now, I knew that, because I knew what the results were. And the academic results were outstanding, which just shows you you can do it with very little money and very little expertise, as long as you've got some other ingredients. And the main ingredient that, I mean, obviously, we were quite highly educated in our fields, and that was a key thing. I think good teachers who know their subject, we did know our subject. We didn't necessarily know how to teach children. But with God's help, they came out stating this over and over again, that they remembered school days filled with love. Isn't that amazing? I hadn't expected that. Didn't put a question in, did you feel you were loved while you were at school? Didn't enter my head to do that. And yet that was the strongest thing that came out of it. Yes, there wasn't much money. Yes, we didn't have PE facilities. But it was good. We had good relationships with our teachers. You know, they loved us. I had picked up on that a bit. As they moved out into other schools, they would come back and say, the teachers don't love us, you know, when they moved out at the age of 16, or maybe some had to move for some other reason. Sometimes they would come back and say, we don't like it, the teachers don't love us. Now, isn't that interesting? They probably did, actually, some of those teachers, but they hadn't been able to convey it. And it dawned on me that what they were talking about was the love of God. And I really believe, you see, that the Lord commands his presence among his people. When people go into these schools, they often say there's an amazing atmosphere here. That's very, very often said. I believe it's the presence of God himself. So that came out for me out of this early research that I did, where I got 240 responses from young adults in their 20s, quite a lot of them, some of them were late teens, who had been through the new Christian schools. And that was when, if we can just put the next one up, I miraculously, and I haven't got time to go into it, encountered a certain person, Professor Leslie Francis. I went to a Christian conference and was introduced to somebody who found out that I'd done this little bit of research and said, my professor, my PhD supervisor, would be interested in your research. And I thought, I didn't say it, but I thought, he won't be. Nobody's interested in our research. Well, to cut a long story short, he was, and he became my PhD supervisor, and I've worked with him ever since over the last 6 years. And Professor Francis, I didn't realize it, had already I should have realised it because our school took part in this research. He had already conducted some research. In fact, I'd sat with the kids while they did the questionnaire. But because of one of my colleagues, my co-head, had actually been dealing with it, it kind of hadn't registered very much. And now I meet this man who actually had sent those questionnaires into our school and into a lot of the other schools. So he had started researching our schools as part of a much bigger project. He got 34,000 responses from right across the country, all kinds of schools, Anglican schools, Catholic schools, you name it, just what they call non-denominational schools, the secular schools. He had a massive data so that he could make comparisons. I bumped into his PhD student in beginning of 2004. She put me in touch with him. I reluctantly went along thinking, this isn't going to work, he's not going to be interested, to find he had just analysed that data for our schools. He'd just got round to it. He'd done his work was already done and published, but obviously we were a tiny part of his work, and he'd just got round to, see, this is a God moment, isn't it? He had just analysed the data to do with our schools. He was incredibly impressed with what he found. He found enormous differences in our young people compared with the young people in the other schools. So to cut a long story short, I embarked on a PhD with him in which I researched all the teenagers in the Christian Schools Trust schools. And before I give you that data, which is a lot of what I'm here for, to give you the data about the young people, this is the outcome. This is what happens when you make the big sacrifice of not putting your children into secular education, but doing something yourself to ensure that their education is the same as what you were trying to do with them in the home and the church. That's how we saw it. The three things, they're being brought up by three communities: the home community, the church community, and the school community. If you have one of those working against everything that the other two are doing, is it surprising when problems emerge? So that was what we were aiming to do, make sure the young people, it's hard to know when they're educated enough to move out. That can vary from child to child. Maybe 14 is old enough for some. We took them through to 16. In some ways it would have been nicer to take them through to 18. But certainly those years, those early formative years until they're in their mid-teens, we believed that they should not be encountering an alien culture. They should be being prepared for it. They shouldn't be ignoring it or not caring about it. And they shouldn't be unfamiliar with it, but they shouldn't be plunged into it. That was what lay behind what we did. So if we just take some more, this is an introduction to what I'm going to bring to you. There are just a few slides that sum it up, so if we could go through them. This Professor Francis is my close colleague. Professor Kay is actually a Pentecostal Christian who's worked with him a lot. Leslie Francis is an Anglican Christian. And this is what they found from research in the mid-90s. There is a general deterioration in attitude towards Christianity during the years of childhood and adolescence. The decline is well established and documented extensively. In essence, children start with positive attitudes and end with less positive ones. And then the next slide says, whatever is causing attitudes to decline affects boys and girls attending denominational and non-denominational schools equally. Now, Leslie Francis is an Anglican, a leading Anglican theologian, and he was admitting that this was happening in the Anglican schools. In fact, he came out of his research with a very poor opinion of the Anglican schools as far as spiritual things go. They're good at getting good exam results and things like that. So the next one really summarizes what they have found. So this isn't just perception, you see. It's not just anecdotal. This is what research has actually found. Older children have moved further away from the faith of their parents than have younger. It's a process that happens. As they get older, they move further away. This is a general thing that happens very often. Not in every case, of course. And this is very well established in the British Christian scene, that boys, and the same is true of men, males, boys and men, are much less likely to have a religious faith than are girls. So I want you to remember that as we go into our research findings, because some of what I found absolutely astonished me. I didn't expect it. I really did not expect these results. That shows you how great my faith is in what we were doing. So in 2006, I surveyed all the teenage pupils in the new Christian schools connected to the Christian Schools Trust. They don't connect all of them. They connect about half of them. So these small independent schools had sprung up all over the country, and about half of them were connected to this thing called the Christian Schools Trust. Those don't all have secondary departments. Some of them are just primary schools. 25 of them have secondary departments, and actually that figure of 25 did include two or three that weren't Christian Schools Trust schools. But of the actual Christian Schools Trust schools, I surveyed 86% of their teenagers. There was only one school that didn't take part. So you see, this research is meaningful. It's almost a population study. I was almost actually able to reach the entire population of teenagers. And the responses were evenly divided between years 9, 10, and 11. So the young people were aged 13, 14, 15, and 16, the teenage years. Most of the schools then don't take them any further than that. One or two maybe do. So they, at that point, at the end of year 11, they move out into secular schooling for their A-levels and things, or to other situations, of course. 52% of them were boys and 48% were girls. Now, one of the early questions was, what is your religion? And I found that 87% said they were Christian. Now, that can mean a range of things, can't it? You know, it can mean you're a deeply committed Christian, or it can mean, like Richard Dawkins says, he's a cultural Christian. So, you know, that there is a huge range of meaning that can be contained in just in that one answer. But for what it's worth, 87% said they were Christian. 11% said they had no religion. And the other 2% was a mixture of the other main religions. Because about 25% of the pupils in the new Christian schools come from non-Christian homes. And actually that figure is increasing. Because we're finding that the Christians of the age to have these young children are the ones that are missing from the churches to start with. So there probably just aren't so many Christian young families wanting education of any sort for their children. But I don't know if that's the only reason, but for some reason, it's more non-Christians coming for. Most of these schools have queues of non-Christians wanting to send their children because they can see the better atmosphere, you know, and the better outcomes. Obviously, they must be sympathetic to the aims. They have to be very sympathetic to the aims or they're not allowed in. And often they become Christians as a result. That's been an unexpected side effect. But it seems that at any one time, up to now, about 25% have been from non-Christian homes. And as I say, I suspect that figure is now rapidly going up. So then another question for the young people, how often do you attend church? And 69% said at least once per week, and 77% said at least once per month. Now, that's good. But I didn't attach too much importance to it because they were probably more like the American ones, you know, going along, or could be, going along because it was still culturally the done thing in their family. Now, that might not be the case, but it might. So at this point, it's not clear how important that figure is, but it's good. They're still there at the age of 16. They're still attending church, and most of 16-year-olds aren't. So that's something. Let's hope, though, that they're not like these ones, you know, sitting in the pews, but not really there, not really there in spirit. So we needed more questions to find out what was really going on with them. Now, I have to tell you that in the main part of my questionnaire, there were 222 questions. So I'm obviously not going to bring you all of those. We may not even have time for the few that I have picked out to bring you. But it's important you understand some things as I put up some more data. I'll give you the figure overall, that for each question, their response to it. That shows you what the responses were from all of them, boys, girls, years 9, 10, 11. Then I give you a figure which compares the boys with the girls. For the mathematicians among you, you might work out this isn't adding up, and I'll tell you why. Because for that, we compared the boys and girls in years 9 and 10, and I'd left out year 11. Now, the reason I did that was that most of Professor Francis's work in the other schools only deals with 9 and 10, and I wanted to be able to make direct comparisons with what he was finding in the other schools. But when it came to comparing them by age, he compares the responses of year 9 with the responses of year 10 and finds a difference. And I thought, well, if there is a difference, it's going to be worse or more or greater between year 9 and year 11. So I compared the responses between year 9 and year 11. So the three sets of data that will come up with each slide, they're actually slightly different groups. That's why the figures don't add up, just for some of you who might have noticed that. So, first of all, how many of them believe in God? 87%. Maybe that's not too surprising. But look at this. As many girls as boys believe in God, and as many year 11 as year 9 believe in God. Now, when it says NS, that means there might be a difference, but the difference isn't statistically significant. You know, there is some sophisticated statistics done here to give you the significance of this. Now, is this a real difference or not? So if you see NS, it means that statistically this is just random. The difference is just random. And actually, there's hardly any difference anyway, is there? So this is the first indication, and it went on to be proved through all of the data that there was no difference between, well, not quite all, but almost all of the data, that there was no difference between the responses of the girls to the responses of the boys, and no difference between the older ones and the younger. You probably can't grasp how important that finding is. All other surveys have found that boys at this age, and younger and older, and men, in the UK, the churches are much feminized. You know, this is a recognized thing, that far more women go to church, not necessarily in every country, but in the UK they do. Far more women go to church, far more women say they believe in God, far more women have a sort of active religious lifestyle than men. Far more girls than boys. Through all other surveys show, whichever group they pick, that there is this decline in religious belief as you go through the teenage years. So, although you might still end up with quite a lot, depending on who you're surveying, you might end up with quite a lot of 16-year-olds still believing in God, but far more of them believed when they were 12, 13, 14. The decline is there. It's shown in every other situation. It is not shown with any of my data to do with religious belief, as you will see, and actually with hardly any of the data in any of the categories. So let's look at another one. I believe in Jesus as my personal saviour. Now, a lot of these questions came from the work that Professor Francis had already done because this is part of a repeat of his major project. So I had to go with a lot of his questions. You know, I didn't necessarily like the way he phrased them or the ones he put in or left out. But I was able to put some in of my own, and this was one I put in of my own. I believe in Jesus as my personal saviour. Now, I don't know if you agree, but I thought that for those of us from our kind of backgrounds, and the churches were set up by people with our kind of background, that this is a more meaningful question to find out where the young people are at. Do you agree with that, actually? I'd be interested to know. Because it's hard. These questionnaires are hard. You know, you have to think really carefully about what you're asking. And I thought that for a young person to answer positively to that would really tell us something about where they really were at. And I found that 76% were able to say they believed in Jesus as their personal saviour. And again, there was no difference between the girls and the boys, and again, there was no significant difference between the younger ones and the older ones. So it was beginning to get really exciting. Now, we'll go more quickly through these now. There was a whole raft of other questions to do with one's Christian walk. And this was one of them. I know that Jesus helps me. These were some that had come from Professor Francis. A lot of his stuff was really good. Again, you know, I don't think you wouldn't say yes to this unless you really meant it, would you? So 77% said yes. Again, no difference, girls, boys, no difference, older, younger. I think Christianity is the only true religion. Now, of course, this one's going to cause them to be at odds with most of our society, depending on how they answered this. Again, the great majority did think Christianity was the only true religion. Now, when we come to the next one, this is of particular interest to me, but I also think these are key questions. They're to do with belief in creation, belief in Genesis. Before I ever got into Christian schools, I actually had another ministry, and it was to go around speaking about creation and evolution, because I studied biology at Sussex University under an eminent evolutionist, John Maynard Smith. I'd gone on to do a master's degree in biology and then to do research in a neuroscience laboratory, pre-doctoral research, which I stopped when I got married for various reasons and went into teaching. So people had asked me to speak on the creation-evolution issue because I was a research biologist at the time, and I had become a creationist while I was at Sussex University. I went there as an evolutionist. This is a whole different story. Became a creationist, and so I did have quite an interesting testimony. And it eventually got published as a book called Bone of Contention, Is Evolution True?, which went on to sell 250,000 copies. So actually, many people know me as this other person, not this school person. So not everybody in the schools would take my position. I think a lot of them would. So this isn't, I'm not speaking now on behalf of the Christian Schools Trust or anything, because there isn't a standard line on it. They are largely creationist. And as you'll see, the pupils are largely creationist. But I'm very creationist. And I think it is a key thing. So God created the world as described in the Bible. I was very surprised at how creationist they were, because I didn't labour it. And if anybody could have laboured it with them, it could have been me. But actually, when I got to teaching, it became an irrelevance, really. You know, you're telling them God created them, you're telling them God loved them, you're telling them the history of science came out of belief in the Bible, telling them that a lot of the early scientists believed in creation, that's how it all got going. You're teaching them the biology, which obviously is done from a design perspective always. There's no other way you can do it. And evolution just kind of doesn't come into it. So then we think, okay, help, we better prepare them. There is this other thing. So you start teaching them about evolution as a debate. But I didn't label it. I was very aware that some of them, particularly the ones from non-Christian homes, might be evolutionists themselves, because children did join the school at various points. And some joined during the teenage years. And I would think, I personally, I don't know if everyone handles it like this, really felt for them. I thought, you know, we've got to respect them. And so I didn't labour it. And another problem is that it's quite hard to do. It's very technical, this. And when they left the school at the age of 16, they were just about old enough to really engage with it. But we'd missed it. You know, they'd gone. So I certainly didn't labour it in my school. And I don't think it is labored in most of the schools, and yet they're all coming out as creationists. Now, that is really interesting, and I'll tell you why it is. And this is established by somebody else's research, that children are born creationists. I don't know if you've heard of that research. It's come out of Cambridge University a couple of years ago. They're born naturally looking out at the world as though it was created. So all our teachers have to do is just go with that, you see, just reinforce it, which is what's in their own hearts anyway. And so they were just, basically, they were just allowed to be what they were, and they've come out of it at the age of 16. In fact, my own children, I can speak for my own children, when they got to university, none of them actually did science, but they encountered friends who did. They were amazed at how little they knew, so we must have been getting something across, how little these other students knew about, even about evolution, let alone creationism. You know, they all said they believed it, but when challenged, they knew next to nothing about it, really. And so that's been a whole interesting thing. So there was once a worldwide flood, as described in the Bible. Again, overwhelming support for that. And as you'll see, no significant difference with the other groups. I believe in evolution creating everything over millions of years. Now, this is fascinating because overall, only 7% said they believed that. But if you remember, 11% of them say they haven't got a religion. So this is quite fascinating. Some of the ones who are not Christians, have no religion, don't believe in evolution, which I think is true of quite a lot of the general population. It just doesn't gel. You know, intuitively, it doesn't feel right, does it? Now, how about the church? How do these young people view the church? So one question was, the church seems irrelevant to life today. And only 9% of them agreed with that. Again, although 11% are complete unbelievers, and 2% belong to the other religions, you know, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist. Can I just see which the next one is? Because I think it got... Yeah, this one got out of sequence. It should. When I had sent it off to you, I don't know if this happens with your computers. I didn't put it there. You know, how did it get there? So this one should really be a bit later on, but in some ways it doesn't matter where it comes because I was really concerned to know if they'd been happy at school. I really wanted to know this. I knew most of them were still Christians. The ones I knew from my own school. I knew they'd done very well, they'd all come out with good exam results. I knew they were going on in life. Well, maybe not every single person, but almost every single person. What I didn't know was whether they had really been happy or whether they would look back and say, well, we didn't have good gym equipment. You know, some of the teachers were a bit weird. And it was all a bit extreme. What would they think? You know, this was a side of it I was really, really interested in. So I was really pleased to find that particularly the ones I surveyed early on, who, looking back from the vantage point of being adults, virtually all said they had been very happy looking back. Some of them said, I didn't realise at the time, and my own children said this, didn't realise at the time how privileged we were to have that kind of education. So I expect this view to change as they get older. But even so, when they can look back on it from an adult perspective, even so, 76% who were currently in the school said they were happy. So that was a relief. That doesn't mean all the others said they were unhappy. Quite a lot of them probably said they didn't know to that one. Because nobody, I mean, I can't say that I was totally happy at school. I would much rather have been at home half the time. What's the next one there that comes up now? I think the Bible is... Yeah, we're back in sequence now. Back where we should be. I think the Bible is out of date. Now, what Ken Ham and the research guy he wrote this book with say is that why they have gone... They're already gone in their hearts as teenagers. They're already gone in their bodies. You know, they've gone properly by the time they're 20. And it's because of the undermining of the authority of the Bible. That's the root issue, he feels. So I think this is tremendous that only 7% of these young people, 25% of whom are not from Christian homes, 11% of whom say they have no religion or faith at all, 2% of whom are Buddhists or Muslims and things, only 7% think the Bible is out of date. Isn't that incredibly encouraging? And they go on to support it by saying that they think religious education should be taught in school. This is just a selection from the 200 questions to give you an overall picture. The next one, Christian ministers, vicars, priests, this is one of Leslie's ways of phrasing it, do a good job. Again, the majority do think that. Although I personally think that one of the problems with the church is often the leaders. I mean, a lot of them did, including the pastors of the children coming to the schools, were not necessarily in favour of the schools. So I think that's probably a better figure than they deserve in some cases, personally. So, but I'm thrilled to see it. You know, I want them thinking that. This is the first one where a difference occurs. If you look down there, year 11, for some reason, and I don't really understand that, had decided, by the 2 years after they were in year nine, some of them had decided that they weren't sure, they did agree with that. But the figure is still 60%, but it is significantly different from the year nine figure. So the next one, this is where that one about being happy at school should have been. And they also like the people they go to school with. Overwhelmingly there, really, 88%. I'm worried about being bullied at school. This is a concern that a lot of parents have. A lot of parents approach the schools with older children saying, my child is being bullied at school, you know, please take my child. 11% say that. I mean, I'm sorry, it is as many as 11%. But that's much, much lower than the figures you find for other schools. You know, there is data that we can compare this with, and that is very much lower than you would find in other schools. Notice that year 11, again, are significantly less likely than year 9 to think that, but even so, it's a low figure. Now, a lot of the questions were about other things that... Not their religious beliefs, you know, a whole raft of things, their moral positions, lots of questions on that. And they took a very standard, on the whole, a very standard Christian view of morality. You know, they didn't believe in sex before marriage, they thought drug taking was awful, all this kind of thing. The sorts of things you would expect them to be saying, really. I hope they're actually living like it. It's easy to say it, harder to live like it, as we all know. But there were lots of other sections about lots of things, and I was concerned to know about their concern for others. So this was one question from that section. I'm concerned about the poverty of the developing world. And here, you know, it was very different from the data from the secular schools. I mean, quite a lot of them said they were, but not nearly as many as the young children from our schools. Young teenagers from high schools. Now, there was a significant difference between the girls and the boys. The girls were more concerned about the poverty of the developing world than the boys. But even so, 76% of the boys were. Now, there was another whole raft of questions, and I won't take much longer now, but there was a whole raft of questions in the whole area of psychological health. Leslie Francis is a theologian, my professor, a theologian and a psychologist. A lot of his research is the link between theology and psychology. Very interesting stuff. And there is a whole well-established body of research connected with what they call psychological health. So one question in that category is, I feel my life has a sense of purpose. And here, our young people had a much greater sense. 83% of them were able to say, I feel my life has a sense of purpose. That was significantly different from children in all the other types of schools. Catholics, Church of England, Jewish, Muslim, or rather the Muslims, because the data can be analysed in lots of ways. So the Muslims in the secular schools, there are Muslim schools, we're only just beginning to research those, but the Muslims in the secular schools, the Jews, whole raft of people, our young people were coming out with a much higher level of psychological health and emotional well-being. And Leslie Francis has written papers on it and chapters in books about our schools, and that's one of the things, that our schools are contributing to the psychological, emotional and spiritual health, he'll use that term himself, of the teenagers. That's tremendously important to me. So another question is, I find life really worth living. But this is just to give you an example of the sorts of questions that were in the questionnaire that have resulted in this picture of our young people as happy at school, consciously following God, and with this concern for others. And there are other questions about that. Now, I'm not saying they're all living like it, of course. None of us do. But this is what they really aspire to. And with this high level of spiritual health and finding, believing that they had a very loving schooling. So now, just to finish with, I want to tell you where the research is up to now. The data, the 220 questions were what is in my PhD thesis, which was passed without me being asked to change anything, and that's fairly unusual. And my supervisor, Leslie Francis, and William Kay, his colleague, who was my external examiner, want to get the thesis published as a book as it stands. Now, we're finding problems with that. The publishers think nobody will want to buy it. But these two professors, and I'm very grateful to them, are really wanting my data to be published as a book, virtually as it stands. That's what they would like. I don't think that's going to be possible. But something you could pray about. I think we're going to have to alter it. They're just not going to be willing to publish it all as a book. We're going to have to find other ways, probably. But that's something to pray about. And that again shows you the opposition in the culture, doesn't it? To because they publish books on all kinds of things, you know, don't they? On kinds of really weird sort of little things that you could also argue nobody's going to be interested in. So anyway, that's in God's hands. So that's one thing. But the next thing is that we are following these young people up. That was the idea from the start. We would do it while they were 16, 13 to 16. We try and do it when they're 18, when they're 21, when they're 30. Now, obviously, it's going to take a miracle to actually be able to do this. And the second survey hasn't gone as well as I'd hoped, in the sense that we've got 146 responses, but they are 146 of the 695 who did it before. And we've surveyed them when they reached the age of 18. Some of them might still have been 17, but 17, 18. End of their sixth form years, year 13. The ones who were the youngest when I did it are only just being surveyed now, but I don't think I'm going to get much more data back from them. So nobody else has had these results. You're the first to actually hear these results. So these are some early results from this second survey. Now this time, 58% of the responses were from women and 42% were from men. So we do get a male-female bias coming in. And anyway, I don't know how that has affected it, because we're in the very early stages of looking at this data. So some early results. What is your religion? Well, 87% when they were 13 to 16, 87% when they're 17 to 18. Now, even though this is a term that, as we said before, can be fairly elastic in its meaning, I do find that very encouraging, that 87% of them still say they're Christians. How often do you attend church? Now, there's been a little bit of a drop-off, but as you can see, not too much. So again, I don't know if that's a significant drop-off. But it's not much of one, is it? So I'm encouraged by that. I believe in Jesus as my personal saviour. Overall, at age 13 to 16, it was 76%. At age 17 to 18, 82%. Now, that actually says to me, of course, that we're selecting the more Christian ones, that they've selected themselves. The more Christian ones have sent back the questionnaires. But given that 87% of them anyway said they were Christians, there's some selection here, but it's still a very encouraging figure, isn't it? I mean, it's not 20% or something. They haven't all suddenly abandoned the faith, which they might have done going into sixth forms, going into sort of aggressively atheistic subjects like psychology and sociology and biology. and geology, and some of them are doing those subjects because that's the kind of question we ask them. So given that this is their first encounter with what I can tell you is often an aggressively atheistic thing, by the time they reach the age of 17 and 18, it's coming out more, this, I'm afraid, often anti-Christian slant in quite a few of the subjects, I'm encouraged by that. I think the Bible is out of date. Now, again, this result tells me that there's been some self-selection here, but I still find it a very encouraging result. That 146, and they're not all Christians, one or two of them said some nasty things, you know. Yeah, I have given a lot of it up since I left the school, one or two. So those kind of people are willing to write back. But we find that only 5% think the Bible is out of date. And again, on the creationism issue, God created the world as described in the Bible. No difference much, or not much difference, if any, with a general question like that. But when it was phrased like, I believe in evolution, creating everything over millions of years, there was some indication there that the boys are moving more in that direction. But not much of one. The very great majority, even after their exposure to whatever they've been exposed to in the secular colleges, are still taking a creationist position. Given how aggressive the Richard Dawkins stuff has been over the last couple of years, I am encouraged by that. Although I do suspect it is having an effect on some of them, particularly some of the boys, as it says there. So, if we just put up the final slide, I would say to you that I think there is a very profound connection between one's Christian position as a young adult, at least, if not an older adult, and the type of school that one went to. And let me tell you what I think are some of the big differences in the culture, you see, that you, as Christians, if you are a Christian, you want a certain kind of culture in your own life and in your family life. You want a culture that's based on the teachings of Jesus, who said things like, deny yourself, take up your cross and follow me, didn't he? Who said things like, sell all you have and give to the poor? Who said things like, turn the other cheek? Who said things like, or Paul did, but it's the same thing, isn't it? Esteem others as more important than yourselves. Who said things like, you know, what is the greatest commandment? To love God with all your heart. And the second like it, love others as you love yourself. That is the exact opposite. And I'm sounding negative, and it's not because I hate all the people out there. I really don't. And I think some of the reasons they've got to where they are is the church's fault. So please hear me correctly on this. But nevertheless, my fault. I'm an older person. You know, I've been the church. I'm not saying they have good reasons, some of them, for their rejection of the church. They think they're doing the right thing very often. But this is where we've got to. The culture out there is saying the exact opposite. It is basically saying, you are all important, love yourself. Think about this. Does this not grate on you? This grates on me so much. You know, esteem yourself, value yourself. You know, look after yourself. Put yourself first. Read the women's magazines. It's all, you know, go for it. You can do it. You are the center. You are the important one. Go on an assertiveness course. You know, assert yourself. Now, sometimes we need that, I know. But this is a totally different picture. Totally different. It's the opposite. But when you bring the young people up, teaching them, you know, lay down your life for others, and they see their teachers doing it, their teachers working for nothing, their parents sacrificing to do this, and it's a big sacrifice, so they see it lived out. Some teachers are working for nothing. I worked for nothing for many years in the schools. Lots of them do. Otherwise, they're probably earning very low salaries. making great sacrifices, teachers cleaning out the toilets, you know, because there's no one else to do it. Real living out of Christianity before them, this kind of living of Christianity, not perfect by a long way, but elements of this. How do they come out of it? They come out of it with the psychological health which those magazines are trying to produce. You know, I sympathise with them. Which the culture is trying to produce. They're trying to produce psychologically healthy people, aren't they? They're trying to produce emotionally healthy people. And they are going about it exactly the wrong way. And if you teach them the opposite, lay down your life for others, you know, centre your life on Christ, seek first the kingdom of heaven, they come out of it healthy, well-educated, balanced, gorgeous young people. So my aim is to convey to you that it has been worth it, and it will be worth it, and it is worth sacrificing, not just those of you who've got children. If only the church in the UK would wake up to this, if only Ken Ham would wake up to that's what's really going to help in the States. And I know they've got a lot more so-called Christian schools. But we've all got to keep examining ourselves to see that it's this kind of thing. And God forced it on us. We didn't have the money. We didn't have the help. We would have liked it. but not having it meant we had to go this sacrificial path. And I think that that is forced us to pray on our knees, you know, day and night, keep this school going. Still doing it. The school that I helped to start, it could go under any time. Some big schools, none of them are very big, but not so much big, but well-established schools that have been going for a long time. Several of those have closed in the last 2 or 3 years. It is extremely hard to do this. So on our knees all the time, but I believe that that is what has produced the fruit. And I just want to really urge you that if you are considering it, that it would be so worth it. Thank you.